Good evening, you all. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. It's time we begin the technical net, as we've done for 35 and a fraction years. The main purpose of the technical net, as you guys have heard so far, so often, is to gather curious radio amateurs who want to know more about wireless equipment, how it works, how to make it work better. The technical net in its format, as to what subjects are covered, the individual sections and their names, primarily is your doing. In other words, you guys make suggestions, and if they're good suggestions and a lot of people like it, we follow it. That's how we ended up with something called the mailbag, and that's how we ended up with something called the space report. And it looks like Roy AC2GS 2 weeks ago started something else, the science and physics section, so to speak. So we're going to have a discussion of science and physics. Roy is probably going to mention the supernova, that's my word for it, that happened over the last week or two. He's got another name, I can't think of the name of it right now. Also, with reference to science, when you see the word, when you see the movie Martian, which they put a lot of, The Martian, they put a lot of effort into making sure it's technically accurate. I know of some errors that they made, and maybe we'll be discussing those. Let me drop. The way a person signs into the technical net, because he does have a question or a comment, and that's the beginning, by the way, the question and comment, the question section. If you want to make a, pose a question that you want answered, or a friend of yours wants answered, or you want to make a comment about what has occurred or in past weeks, or what's happening right now, you're going to give this group of people, you're going to give us your call letters and your name, and the word yes. Yes means you do have a question or a comment. You need not sign in because you're listening. In the old days, we used to have long lists of people signing in because they were listening. After 35 years, that's no longer needed to be proven to us. We believe somebody is listening after 35 years of TechNet. And I should mention that the TechNet is almost always being recorded. And by the way, I find this paper. There it is. You can listen to the last 10 and a fraction years of TechNet by going to the website of amateurradio.tangovictor, amateurradio.tangovictor, and you can listen to the last 10 and a half years of TechNet. Choose the right year, the right month, the right week, and you can play back all that has occurred. Even some of it is actually documented as to what takes place during each 10 minutes or so. For a while, Mike number one, KC2NJI, was doing that, but that was a heroic effort. Another supporting website for the TechNet is Mike number two, K1MJM. You'll find that at limarktechnet.com. Limark, L-I-M-A-R-C, TechNet.com. And there you'll find supporting photographs, articles, charts, graphs, and so on. So, at this time I'm going to take check-ins for people who do have a question or a comment. You're going to give me your call letters and name. A typical sign-in would sound like this. WS2N, Paul, and yes. Paul, as you know, is the guy who runs the space report. So, give me your call letters and your name and the word yes right now. If you do have a question or a comment for the net, K2RIW listening.
N2A2H, that's with my test results and continuation from 2 weeks ago, Dick. Andy in Queens.
Okay, we've got Andy, and there was a double. Who was the other person?
It was N2EO, me. I got a question there,
Okay, so far we've got Andy and Rich. Anyone else to check into the TechNet? Give me your call letters and name right now. anyone with any questions or comments, if they want to be added to the list, give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW, listening. And I should mention, by the way, when it comes to the TechNet, there's no such thing as a dumb question. For people who are afraid to pose that question because they feel bashful, they think it's not worthy of this group, it's not a high enough technology question, and maybe you even have trouble figuring out the right words to pose the question. Our philosophy on the TechNet is that a so-called dumb question is the one most deserving of an answer, because it represents the biggest gap between what the guy would like to know and what he presently knows. So don't worry about your question not being of the right sophistication. So one more call. Anybody with a check-in? Because if you have a question or a comment, even a dumb question, if your call letters right now, K2RIW listening.
WS2N, Paul, your SpaceNet report, and a question.
Okay, Paul's added to the list for a question. Okay, we're going to start off with Andy. We've done a whole lot of homework, and now he's got a bunch of answers for us. N2HUH in Richmond, K2RIW. Go ahead, Andy.
Good evening, Dick Internet. I do want to say quickly that before the announcement, I was asking about black holes on the on one of the past TechNets, so I had a little ESP there. Anyway, to cut to the chase, on the ASU-ST847 with the low output problem, I believe all my devices in the PA are good, and I may have the exact same problem or similar problem to Eric's ST847 with the bandpass filters not switching. So I was hoping possibly Eric might be around now or later to tell me what board and what device to check for non-switching bandpass filters. Back to you, Dick.
Okay, let's see if Eric is around. KE2EJ, the expert on the ST847. K2RIW, are you around with us tonight, Eric?
K2RIW, K2J. Can you copy me, first of all?
Copying you, beautiful. So not to worry. And did you hear what Andy said with reference to the ST847 and the switching of the filters? He suspects could be a factor for why he's getting 50 watts out instead of 100. K2EJ, K2RIW, go ahead, Eric.
Actually, Bridgeport, what you should say. Two things. One is there's I think it's a 4-8 data selector, which then runs the individual relays. It's got open collector transistors to drive the relays. But I'm hearing Andy say that he's convinced that his transistors are not bad, and may I remind you that those transistors are actually a whole bunch of transistors in a package, whereas I have some transistors that look perfectly good, but when you put them on a curve tracer, you can see that you don't have the gain you're supposed to have, so that's a really important thing. If you've got an RF phone meter, let me interrupt. Got an RF voltmeter. You want to know what the gain is from stage to stage. Even in push pull, you can still figure out what's going on there. So I wouldn't be quick to dismiss that you don't have a bad transistor, because if you've got the problem with the filters, I think they attenuate a lot less when you get the wrong one, but that could be wrong about that.
Now, way back in the 1970s, RCA came out with a concept called the overlay transistor. They called it overlay. So really, it was a whole bunch of transistors in the package, all the emitters were wired in parallel, all the collectors were wired in parallel, and so on. So I think you're saying many of the modern-day transistors, in order to have enough peripheral area to the gate assembly, and it's the perimeter of the gate that does all the work. That's why quite often the gate has a whole bunch of individual fingers, and even a whole lot of peripheral area. The outer edge does the work, the inner fat part of the fingers doesn't work as hard. So I think you're saying that almost any method of testing the transistors, if some of them have blown open gold bonding wires, and therefore they're not even there, but the remaining transistors will still pass an individual ohmmeter test. Forward and reverse currents and leakages and everything will look normal until you put it on the full RF working load. I think that's somewhat what you're saying. Is that true, Eric? KE2EJ, K2LIW?
No, I specifically said put it on a trip tree. If you've got an RF voltmeter in the real world, you should figure out what the gain of the transistor is, you know what the gain should be, and that'll tell you right off the bat. I mean, if you're lucky enough to have a test station, which I do, you see it instantly. The gain versus current. And it doesn't matter whether it's an FET or a bipolar transistor. In the case of what he's doing, they're bipolar, so it's really easy to see.
If your particular high power transistor really has, let me pick a number, 25 individual transistors in there, all running in parallel, and if some of them have failed in the partial short circuit mode, yes, you'll measure the wrong amount of gain. But if your curve trace, but if the transistors there that are defective are completely blown open, so therefore you've got some defective transistors and some completely open circuited transistors where nothing is connected to them, at curve tracer current level, the gain might be normal, Eric. And until you put it under full RF drive conditions, you wouldn't see that the rest of those devices are not there. It's a guess on my part. So there's many ways that some of your transistors can fail, I think. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Yeah, I'm on edge, you're right, but it's been my experience that when you get open, things don't look quite like they look like they did. You gotta remember that in parallel, the actual in between the devices is very small, but when you put a good one on a curve tracer and you compare it to a bad one, there's enough of a difference to ultimately, putting it under full load, and then looking at the amount of signal at the base and the amount of signal at the collector told you right off the bat. So, I mean, I'm not going to argue with that. That's ultimately the best way. If you don't have an RF voltmeter, take yourself a diode, capacitor, use some high impedance meter, make yourself a little detector probe, and, you know, it'll be a relative measurement. It won't be actual dBm or microvolts or millivolts, but yet you can still be able to determine gain from that. So with that one, Dick.
Oh yes, I do, Eric. And there's many ways you can confirm that the right amount of drive power is arriving at the final transistor. An RF voltmeter. Let's see now. A fast scope that operates up to 30 megacycles with a good performance and a very low capacitance scope probe would allow you to see the real RF voltage getting to the input stage of the into the final stage. Part of what I think Andy's going to want to confirm is that the real drive power is arriving at the final stage. It also could be done with an RF sniffer, a very small loop of wire on the end of a piece of semi-rigid, or even a piece of RG58, going into a known machine like a spectrum analyzer, RF voltmeter. that'll also give you a strong hint as to what's going on. So, Andy, you did say that you've confirmed that the final transistors are good. I wonder what method you used for that confirmation, because most of the tests that I can envision would be a necessary but not sufficient. A good stage will pass a certain test, but some of these tests that they'll pass might not be good enough for the full 100 watts of power output. N2HUH, you take it. K2RIW. How did you do that test, Andy? Go ahead.
I'm going to be very happy to tell you that in my next transmission, Dick, but I still have a question that remains unanswered from Eric. Is having trouble locating my schematic and such. Can Eric tell me anything more about that device, the data selector for the bandpass filters? And can you tell me what board that's located at, or any other information to get me started in that area, if you can remember, Eric? Over to you.
And as you pick that up, Eric, my question is, if he goes to the right website, can he download a schematic? Can he download the service manual for that particular rig? K2EJ, K2RIW?
K2RIW, K2EJ. Well, if you send me for $30, then that's your list of CD, which has everything on it. But there are actually a couple of websites where they have some lousy scans that you can see it. I can't remember it offhand. I think it's a German site. There's another one called Manuals. You can just do a Google search, EH2847, and you'll find one. You'll be able to see it. But anyway, the filters are on the main board, the main transmitter board. The amplifier is separate from the filters. The filters are on that main transmitter board. The amplifier board is independent of that. The output of that, the actual signals that drive the data selector comes from the computer. And that radio is on the subboard, which has the computer and all those things on it. I'm sorry I can't be more specific, but I have the manual in front of me. I can tell you exactly. Sorry, WJ3J.
Is it possible that you'll be moving to such a location where maybe you'll have that manual in front of you sometime between now and midnight tonight? Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, well, we'll be getting on the boat, I guess, and a bunch of folks are going to leave one. Yeah, we'll be in Port Jeff at 9:30, so then about another 20 or so minutes to take getting home, and then 10:15 or 10:30, something like that, I'll be able to help you out.
Are you saying you're in Port Jefferson right now, or you're in Connecticut? Where are you, Eric? Go ahead.
I'm in Bridgeport, Connecticut at the moment, waiting to get on the boat to go to Port Jefferson, because I don't feel like driving around tonight.
That's fantastic. I'm hearing you beautifully on the input, and you're getting through the machine with a 95% quieting. What kind of a rig are you using? Is this an automobile that I'm listening to running 50 watts? Eric, go ahead.
No, it's supposed to be 50 watts, but I think I killed the power block a while ago. Let's see. Tell me which one's better. This one? No, this one. This way is through 375. I mean, I get both of them.
You're 95% quieting on the first one. For 375, you're 50% quieting. Eric, go ahead.
My radio's only putting out about 80 watts at the moment. I bought another chip for it. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. Speaking of which, I finished fixing the 1.2 gig. I'm just waiting for mail. I was going to put it in today, but I just didn't have it in 3 weeks. CQRIW, change to the game.
And you probably know that if you move your automobile, for all we know, the signal going into 375 would get stronger, and the signal to 85 will change. There's always multipath, and as you move, you get peaks and valleys. pretty sure you know that. You were sitting still at the time. Is that true, Eric?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm sure we'll be really mobile.
Out of curiosity, are you able to transmit to us from the ferry you're about to get on?
Absolutely, I do it all the time. We've
been doing the first time to take the ferry. The lazy man's wheel. However, if your car is in the middle of that ferry, you're inside of this Faraday cage that has an open end on to, you know, the forward end, the stern and the bow have an open end, but the rest of it is metal enclosed. So depending on where the repeater is, that ferry could give you a fair amount of attenuation. Although, maybe you're going to tell me that the opening is so big, the signal pours out of there as if there was no ferry at all. Is that true? Eric, keep your eyes on it.
Yeah, I've been on the ferry which has the closed back, and thinking, oh well, that would be somewhere directionally on that, but you don't really notice. And yeah, the aperture of where the cars are is pretty big. And all throughout the interior, there's lots of points, so if you were thinking you were through a moving flat air, and that might also work. I'm usually lucky enough that I'm close enough to the front that I've never noticed anything different, but other than the time there's in the back, things would be directional, but that didn't really happen.
A similar thing happens when you're listening on your handy talkie when you're on an airliner. The only signal that can get out of the fuselage of that aircraft is through the windows, which is, you know, 5 or 10% of the sheet metal is windows, the rest of it is all sheet metal. So the aircraft probably gives you, I'm going to pick a number, a 10 decibel attenuation. But when you're up in the air nice and high, you've got direct line of sight. Obvious by what happened when Owen Garriott was on the, can't think of the call letters right now, K5 something or other, when he's on the space shuttle over northern Texas, 1,500 miles away. But direct line of sight to New York, I had no trouble hearing him on my handy talkie in Farmingdale. So altitude counts so much that it can cancel an awful lot of attenuation services. So it looks like Eric, somewhere at 10:30 tonight, Andy is going to have access to that manual where he can give you direct information from the horse's mouth into HUH. H-U-R-I-W, you got it, Andy.
W-H worldwide.
You don't recognize, but Andy first said it.
I'll have no problem finding or downloading manuals and all that, but yeah, I look forward to maybe getting a little consultation with Eric with a little bit more information to get me speeding along on my way. I'd like to tell you, Dick, how I determined that it's not the devices and the PAs that, although I do concur and like all the ideas we had on the of checking, I decided to do something a little more creative and inventive. Was I was going to bypass the boards entirely, but what I did instead was I said, well, at 50, in the 6 meter band below 54 megahertz, there's a bandpass filter. If I can transmit at 54 megahertz, there isn't a bandpass filter. And that's exactly what I did. Just 5 kc's below 54 megahertz, I only got 20 or 30 watts out of the final section. And then when I went to 54 megahertz, lo and behold, 100 watts output. 100 watts output. Yes, you heard it. 100 watts output. No bandpass filter. I thought that was a great way of doing it. So there's 100 watts available on 6 meters, or just above 6 meters, at 54 megahertz. 5 kc's above and full output into HUH.
If you get 100 watts at 54, what do you get at 50.125, Andy? Yeah, go ahead.
The same as the entire 6 meter band that's controlled under the bandpass filter was only 20, 30 watts, and on HF from 160 meters to 10 meters is, you know, same thing, 30 watts, 40 watts, whatever. It's not every one is just exactly the same, but it's all under 50 watts, and there is no bandpass filter for, it doesn't switch at all, I said before, it doesn't switch in or out, it's just not there. And full output at 54 megahertz.
How do you think it's being transmitted
just above 54? I'll repeat that, Eric. Go ahead.
Yeah, unless you change the internal setting to the radio, it doesn't allow you to transmit out of band.
He did say 5 KC below 54 megs. He was up to 53.995 is what I think you're saying. Is that true, Andy?
I'm agreeing 100% with Eric, but no, I made the radio transmit out. So, no, I agree 100% with Eric, as he said, but no. The entire 6 meter amateur band is 30 watts output. But when I went to 54 megahertz, 5 KC's above, the amateur band allocation, 5 KC's above, I got my 400 watt output. So that was my idea of, that again is my idea of how to simply bypass the board.
Yeah, Andrew?
How did you get it to transmit at 54 plus 5 KC?
Wait a minute, Eric, I'm supposed to be consulting with you, you're not supposed to be consulting with me. I told you, that's why they call me Handy Andy. I'm a very creative fellow sometimes, I tell you. You know, when you think out of the box. I was very happy I was able to do it that way. My radio can transmit it out of that band if I wanted to. That's not a problem. You could do the same thing, I'm sure, Eric, if you wanted to. So, yes, 5 KC's out of the ham band with no bandpass filter engaged, which it's not. It's full output again. They maintain full output. So, I will need more information on that data controller, data selector for the bandpass filtering.
Okay, so you changed some of the figures, or somebody changed some of the figures on that. That's why I did the voice. When you go out of the band, there's no filter involved. There is some other stuff. I gotta be a funny schematic. I don't want to say this now, but, there's a couple of possibilities of what could be going on here. But you definitely prove the alphabet is good. It may not necessarily be having a bad filter or just having the wrong filter. And then, as you know, if you have no filter, you get to pull out. But, that's why in our voltage is a worthwhile thing. You can trace the inlay and see where what things are happening. But I'll get on later when I have the information, and then we can go through it.
Yeah, I've got a question for you, Eric. Any bandpass filter is going to have a little bit of insertion loss. And when he's on 54 plus 5 KC, and the filter is thoroughly bypassed, you no longer have the insertion loss of the filter in theory. Although I can't believe the filter has a high power filter, it's got 3 dB of loss, 50 watts versus 100. So when he goes out of the band, the radio is smart enough to know to flip its switches so that the output filter is thoroughly bypassed. Is that what's going on here, Eric? Is the radio that smart, KE2EJ, K2IW?
K2IW, K2EJ. Transmit outside of the bandpass. When that happens, there's no appropriate filter. That's why, of course, the FCC gets really unhappy because it's not transmitting without an output filter. So, you become harmonic city, and that makes your radio, it's not a good thing. But, because there's no filter there, it's simply the output's going to the antenna connector. There is insertion loss through future focus filter according to each band. But even if you, say, have the 10-meter filter in on your transmitting on it, and the 80-meter, the bandpass filters are not, they're considered to be low-pass filters, so the upper end is not attenuous until you finally get past like 50 megahertz. But having the roll filter in line, I'd expect there to be some attenuation. But I would also expect the components to be getting hot if not making them and letting the smoke out, so I don't know. Let's wait until I can see the schematic and then I can give a better concept. Okay, so I'll have to see the
WA2111.
IMX recognized. I'm going to pick up with Joe in a second. I think I'm agreeing with what you're saying, Eric. A final filter in the transmitter after the 100 watt stage would have to have only a couple of tenths of a dB of insertion loss. Otherwise, at the 100 watt level, it would run very hot.
WA2YY,
go ahead, Joe.
I'm going to make a comment on this, but you can put me on the end of the list for a question. I do have a question, a broadcaster question. But it makes me think, I'm listening to this partially, discussion I was saying. It makes me think like possibly the microprocessor is controlling the poop as you go in the 6 meters and maybe you put into a mode like possibly like either European or Japanese where sometimes they have power restrictions on certain modes. I wonder if you could possibly have done that inadvertently, put the radio into a mode like if they say a European model or a Japanese model, because some of these radios will do that. They are made from multi places around the world. And sometimes the microprocessor can either control or not control the power level depending on where you are, depending on what model of seat is supposed to be. You might want to try also transmitting at like 49.995, just below 6 meters, and see if your power jumps back up to 100 watts or whatever. As you do that, if you make it go low like that, just something to think about possibly. Because I can't believe a filter is that sharp when you kind of filter it in. And that's, more than 3 dB of loss. It transmits 100 watts on 6 meters, or at 54 mega, transmits 30 watts. And below that, that's 6 dB of loss, almost. That's a lot of loss for a filter.
I agree with you. 50 watts output versus 100 watts output, that was done by a filter. That's not a lot of loss. That's 3 dB of loss, half power. That means the filter is dissipating 50 watts. Or reflecting 50 watts to something that's absorbing it, which, in either case, that ain't good. Mr. INX, give us your full call letters and your name, and go right ahead with your comment on this subject. Mike INX, K2LIW.
Hi, this is Kilo Delta 2, India November X-ray, good evening. My name is Bob, I'm out in West Hampton. I had seen that the same problem with one of my Yaesu radios. It was a plug-in module. It would go crazy. It hit 54, 55 megahertz. But I was in a dummy load. It wasn't hooked up to an antenna. And I thought it was just me. But that's all I have to say about this.
Bob, what did you do to fix the problem?
I don't go to those frequencies.
Okay, so I wonder if your problem is identical to what Andy is talking about on 80 to 10 meters and 6 meters, I think it is. No, 80 to 10 meters. A rig is supposed to put 100 watts out, is only putting out 50. And on 6 meters, it still puts out 50 unless he goes out of band. Is that what you're saying that you encountered, Bob? KD2INX, K2LIW?
My modules only put out 10 watts normally, but when I went to 54.5 and 56, they put out about 15 or 16 watts, which was unusual. You know, the radio's not normally not allowed to go that high, but it does, which I don't know why it does, but it does on 6 meters, and it was just odd. You know, all of a sudden you see the watt meter climb, and I'm like, well, what's going on, you know? But I just don't go to the frequencies.
Now, Andy, hopefully, you're using a power meter. You got such watts on 6 meters that you trust. Bird or Weichel, some brand of power meter where there isn't just something funny going on with the power meter. N2HUH, KQRIW, go ahead, Andy.
No, I'm way ahead of you, Dick, and not to... I think we're diluting the issue, although I welcome all comments on this. The point of this exercise, and my idea, was to prove that rather than using all the test equipment and getting really down and dirty in there, without even touching anything, really, all I was gonna do was disconnect the board, but I decided to do it this way. So basically, the point is I've proved that the radio puts out 100 watts output. That's the bottom line. So it's not I eliminated all the PA devices, and that was the point of my exercise in doing it this method that I believe I developed, because I've never heard anybody doing it before, but that was my method of quick and easy, just making sure that all the devices are putting full output, and they are, 54 megahertz, and let me let it drop for a second.
Yeah, that's a very crafty technique, Jeff, maybe. And most transistors put out less power at higher frequencies. So if you can get the full 100 watts output at 54 megs, it implies the final transistors are hunky-dory and all the drive circuitry is hunky-dory. That's a very crafty test. Wait for me. Go ahead, Andy.
Well, look at all I have to take apart the entire radio. With boards flopping and cables hanging, and it's like doing brain surgery. You have all these things that can get damaged, cables and ribbon cables and connectors, and you have to go in there and do all these live tests. And I said, there's got to be a better way first. All right, I gave it some thought, and that's what I come up with. I was going to eliminate the. This worked out great. So at the 53.995 megahertz, I get 30 watts output, and at 54 megahertz, I get 100 watts output. And I don't want to go through all the methods that I used, watt meters, radios, and everything else you can think of to confirm that I'm putting out how many dB more signal from 53.995 to 54 megahertz. No, it's confirmed.
WHYY, did this radio ever make 100 watts on the HF band and 6 meters? Did you buy this radio new or was it used? Did you ever see it make 100 watts at any time?
As he told us last week, he was always getting 100 watts until very recently. Is that true, Andy?
Her voice sounded familiar, but I didn't hear a call sign. But anyway. Yeah, Dick, yes, on Monday the radio was putting out 100 watts on all bands, or let's say realistically most bands, and within that month every band was putting out 100 watts on Monday, and on Friday it decided to put out 30 watts on all bands, on all HF bands. So that was the, without touching anything or doing anything, just turning on the radio, and lo and behold, as my call sign says, huh? What happened to my 100 watt radio? From a Monday to Friday.
And by the way, I'm going to stop worrying about the, is your watt meter accurate? In order to generate a bad watt meter that reads 100 watts at 54 megahertz and 30 watts at 10 kc below that, that's impossible. So if you saw 100 watts, I believe it. So, you've now eliminated a hell of a lot of grief of taking things apart to try to confirm those heavily soldered in final transistors, whether or not they're defective. And at a frequency of 54 megs, they can put out 100 watts. They're cranking. All that drive circuitry is cranking. So there's something wrong with the logic. The rig thinks it's European, or it's switching in the wrong filter at the wrong time. But to do that on every single one of the bands, 8 to 6 meters, what in the world could the common denominator in that one be? If you had the functional block diagram in front of you for that rig, boy, that's a lot of common denominators, you know what I mean? N2HUH, K2LIW, wait for the beep, you got it, Andy.
You got it, Dick, and that's why I'm scratching my head saying, and, you know, as my call's like, huh? I don't get it. I mean, yeah. And I'll give you another example, Dick, of how I confirmed it. I had another radio, another transceiver on 54 megahertz, so when I'm transmitting at 53.995, even through a dummy load, whether the transceiver had an antenna or not, I don't remember, but let's say I got X9 at 53 megahertz, and at 54 megahertz, I was 20 dB over, so obviously the 100 watts was there through the dummy load. It was, you know, the radios right next to each other, and it's such a dramatic, not even changing the frequency on the receiver, it just jumped right up as soon as I hit the 54 megahertz, so I confirmed it with 2 watt meters and a receiver. 100% solid defense.
Are those high power filters switched in and switched out by way of pin diodes, do you believe, Andy? Go ahead.
It's funny you mention that. I actually did the modification where you use a low noise level diode on that radio on all the bands. That's what I do. And that was going back quite a few years though when I did that. I don't remember the specifics, but you remember the radio was working fine on Monday and not on Friday. But in all those years it was working fine. I hope I answered your question. But I'm not sure. I think that at 54 megahertz there's no filter in line, and I think that's the possible explanation as to why it's happening is at 54 megahertz there's no filter in line. Not the wrong one. There's just none. It's like as if you remove the entire board, and now you have 100 watts straight through, like a non-tuned circuit.
Hey, Jack, can you hear me? We're hearing you quite well, Eric. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm actually on the boat now. There's a thought that I had, and this may be relevant. They had designed that radio for a couple of different output modules, and there is in the menu, in the maintenance menu, a setting that sets up the amount of drive for each particular band. There's also a master setting. I can't remember where it is exactly off the top of my head, but I wonder if one of those things got changed. That's why it's having issues.
Now I'm going to add a couple of words to that one before heading back to Amy. Every so often, a static electric glitch or whatever can happen so that the menus on your microprocessor decide to flip from stage A to stage B. So there may be some menu in there that changed when it was not supposed to during a thunderstorm or whatever, Andy. So that may be what you're eventually going to confirm. And when all filtering is removed at 54 megahertz, how does the radio do that? Is there a real set of contacts, a relay that change, or is it pin diodes that are changing? N2HUH, K2LIW.
The diodes that I changed were to reduce receiver noise, but so we may not be on the same page there. But I have HF radios. I have to do some more drug work on and research on the 847. When I have radios that they actually switch with relays, these filters, and you can hear them clicking away on some of your older or larger radios. On this radio, I don't know. Maybe Eric knows, but I don't, and I can't be sure offhand. I just don't remember hearing anything clicking away, so that's a good question, and maybe you're right, it's done with diodes, because I don't remember hearing anything clicking away recently. Unfortunately, I actually do operate or have my hands on quite a few radios, so it's hard for me to get intimate with any one particular unit. And back to you, Nick, N2HH.
Yeah, we've got a set of conditions here that are impossible, so to speak. If a pin diode is doing the switching of putting in and putting out a filter, and if it's only going part way and not really putting in the filter full blast, and we're sort of speculating that pin diode, if there is one, is creating the loss of 50 watts. 50 watts or more is being lost because you've only got 30 or so watts output instead of 100. For a little diode, unless it's got a huge heat sink on it, to dissipate something like 50 watts without letting the smoke out, that's impossible. So, as you know, Andy, what you're describing to us is impossible. You think you're saying this. It can't happen. You can't get 50 watts of dissipation in any reasonable size pin diode without a humongous heat sink, without you smelling a lot of burning material in there, and I know you don't. So, it's a bit of a mystery. And to HUH for any further comments, drag your feet in case somebody else wants to give us some words. KQLIW in the TechNet.
I got another thought, Dick.
Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I would measure the feedback on the fallback circuit. Because the fallback circuit could actually change the bias on the output. And I do believe that the microprocessor sets up a value depending upon the band in terms of what the gain in the op-amp is that's doing it. Again, I'm pulling this out of my head, so I might as well be pulling the rabbit out of my head. I really got to get in front of the paper to look at it, because, I mean, that is another good possibility here.
Okay, Andy, Eric, you said fallback circuit. Let me reword that. Final stage protection circuit. Most of our modern day radios, if they start seeing, let me pick a number, a 3-to-1 standing wave ratio, rather than burn out the final stage, the radio will cut back its final power output. Maybe that's what Eric is calling fallback. It goes to a lower power output to make sure it doesn't burn up that final stage into a high vis line. So is it possible that that circuit is being false alarm? Some kind of an error in that circuit is occurring. So it's seeing what it thinks is a high vis loss on all bands. And somehow that circuit, that low power, reverse power sensing circuit, gets bypassed. Therefore, at 54 megs, you see full power output. You see where I'm going with that one, Eric? So what you're calling fallback, could that be a so-called protection circuit being false alarm? KE2EJ, KQLIW.
You got it, Jake.
Okay, that gives us there's a very specific place in the rig where there is the equivalent of a directional coupler very close to the output connector, which senses reverse power. Whenever you've got a high standing wave ratio antenna transmission line load, whenever there's a high standing wave transmission line load, that really means a certain power is being reflected. In fact, you know, you guys that are listening to this, you know that whenever you use a bird watt meter or whatever, you measure forward power and reverse power, that ratio is what determines your measurement of standing wave ratio. So there's a circuit in there that looks at how much power is reflected back into the rig from the outside world. That circuit maybe is being false alarm, like some kind of an error. And boy, that would be a beautiful common denominator. A nice low power fix for the
repeater. Time out.
as I was saying, a nice low power fix for all of this, Andy, and you wouldn't have to get into anything very elaborate. Let's hope that's what it is. That would be a beauty. N2HUH, K2LIW, the TechNet.
Okay, Eric, thank you, and Dick, very good. Why me? But that would actually make, come to think of it, that would make an interesting common denominator for the symptoms. Although not folding back or protection circuit not engaging at 54 megahertz is interesting too. But maybe just the wrong filtering. Maybe there isn't. That's very good. And you know what? These microwave process control grids, you know, you got to expect some of these oddball anomalies, I guess, situations that make me scratch my head. So, very good. All right. I can't add anything more to puzzlement and fitting to my call sign, huh? And this is my additional list.
N2EO, I got an answer.
You're waiting for somebody to unkey the rig. N2EO, K2RW, go ahead, Rich. Be careful about not keying that rig and leaving it on for a whole lot of time, you know what I mean? You got it, Rich.
Okay, I'm on echo link right now. I hope you hear me okay. N2EO, my battery is about to die. I want a radio free. Microprocessor can get jumbled for no apparent reason. Can we get the microprocessor on a lot of radios, turn the radio off, hold down the A equals B switch for the VFO, and then turn the radio on, the radio will reset, and maybe that'll solve it. Back to next.
Comment?
Yeah, have you already done a complete microprocessor reset, Andy?
Yeah, I had 100 memories in the radio. Not only did I get a microprocessor reset, I also disconnected the lithium backup battery and reset it with no lithium backup battery. Reset and left it unplugged overnight and on that must have also did a hard reset about 6 or 8 times, just looking to see if I saw any different symptoms or anything, and to no avail. So no, I've been there, done that.
Okay, you're way ahead of us, Andy. So that's another one of the things checked off. Hopefully when Eric finds his manual, when he gets home tonight, he'll be able to tell you to go to test point number 45, where you look at the actual voltage being derived by the output reverse power protection circuit. And that voltage being derived is supposed to be below some particular number. Something funny that's going on there, where a diode decided to become leaky, and therefore the apparent voltage is rising above what it should be if it was really an RF derivation. When you're running into a dummy load, you don't have any reverse power, so that circuit shouldn't be false alarm. And by the way, you did measure the power during some of these tests into a dummy load just to confirm that nothing funny is going on with the antenna. I'm double checking on that one, Andy. N2HUH, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Hey, yes, Dick. Concurrent confirmed.
Okay. So, you're going to be confirming if the right filters are being thrown in, but the filters, I'm having trouble believing that all the filters are goofed up on every single bed. band is a more common denominator, and that output protection circuit, which probably gets bypassed at 54 megs, is a common denominator, a beautiful one. Okay, we're going to go to the next person on the list, which was Rich N2EO. N2EO, go ahead, there, Rich, KGYW in the TechNet. And maybe Rich's battery did die like he said it was going to. The next person on our list for a question was Paul, WS2N. WS2N, go ahead, Paul, K2RIW.
WS2N. Give me about 10 minutes or so. Can you take somebody after me? K2RW, KD2NIU.
KD2NIU. K2RIW, start up with your handle, sir.
Call us Kilo Delta 2, November, Oscar uniform. Here's Ben, Bravo Alpha November. And I don't know what you want to take me in, but I just wanted to give you an update on my mobile antenna that I added ground plane radio to.
Go right ahead, Ben.
Hey, roger that. So, as you said, I added ground plane radios for my mobile antenna, and I mounted it on one of those SO239 to SO239 chassis connectors, and I used some 12-gauge Romex wire. I used one on each corner for 2 meters, and then one on each corner for 220. I didn't add any for 440 because they were harmonically related. And as I told you, I thought that RF was coming back in the shack, which it was, because my keyboard was turning off when I was transmitting on VHF, and now I noticed that was gone. So I think that solved the problem, and SWR was a little bit lower than it was, but it was still very good. Over to you, Dick.
Sounds great. What was the Bizwar before and after Ben? And even if those ground plane radios were not enough, the next step would be belt and suspenders, the poor man's balance, a few turns of coax near the antenna. So what was the Bizwar before and after you added those radios? And what was the ground plane before you added the radios, the counterpoise? Over to you, Ben.
It was somewhere around 1.3. I don't remember the exact number. One frequency, and then the same frequency after I entered the radio, so it was like 1.2 something. There actually was no radios, no ground plane before. I was just having the coax go into an SO239 barrel into the bottom of the mobile antenna up on a mast. There was no ground plane involved. And then you recommended I added a ground plane. Many others did too.
Okay, so there was no ground plane radios before, no official electronic counterpoise. You had the coax going straight to this antenna, and it was mounted on a mast. How did you mount it on a mast? I mean, it was mounted to a metal pipe. And the metal pipe was a partial counterpoise, if you know what I mean. 82 NOU, KGRW, you got it then.
Dick, I'm still here. You're not letting me in. Echo Link is very, very slow.
Earlier, we called your call letters 3 times in a row and waited 30 seconds. That wasn't enough. Go ahead with your answer, Ben. By the way, a 1.2 and a 1.3 standing wave ratio. That's a beautiful number. So, I think if it was mounted on a metal mast, the metal mast, although it was nowhere near resonant, at least was a partial ground plane pad. It had to be some kind of a partial ground plane. Otherwise, if I took the center conductor of a coax cable, connected it directly to a radiator, and the shield went nowhere, I would never get a 1.3 standing wave ratio. I'd get a 30-to-1 standing wave ratio. So the mast you mounted it on was a partial ground plane before, just that it wasn't properly tuned, and therefore you had RF in the shack. KD2, November Oscar Uniform, K2 LIW, you got a bend.